Oh, that's just showing off.
Why have you stopped?
Everyone's dead, and you're welcome.
The Master Rune is still awakened, you ignorant Duarden fool! Unless we quieten it now, then Uthman may have succeeded in destroying this city yet!
I didn't know you cared, Elfling!
Indiscriminate death brings Cain some amusement, but little glory!
Gotrek walked towards the pulsing rune, his one eye half shut against the glare of it, and kicked Uthan's body with his boot.
I knew it! He really is dead!
A knife in the back will do that.
Some lich he was!
Are you even capable of focusing on the matter in hand?
The Doomseeker made a spit on Uthan's body, only for the gobbet to evaporate mid-flight.
Lucky for you both, I've rediscovered the joys of life today!
We should try and move the rune! Merciless hag! It burnt my hand!
Elves. No belly for the heat.
I'm going to wrap it in the lion's skin, you corpulent imbecile. If we can bring it to the Lord's Veritant or one of the mages of the college, then maybe they will be able to reverse whatever the eye not seen has done.
Malineth cast her cloak over the rune, only to see it immediately catch a flame.
That worked.
At least I am trying.
Well, stop now. The thought of you shedding any more layers to douse this thing is making my stomach turn. In fact, see if you can find that mask again while you're at it.
It's like trying to pick up a hot coal.
No, I could pick up a hot coal.
Can you move it?
No. It was meant for Arik Grimnir or one of his rune sons. It can't be moved. It'll have to be quenched before it breaks itself apart and takes Hammerhal Atcher down with it.
Typical. First place in this whole realm where we can get a half-decent beer.
Quenched? How?
I know of only one way. The runecraft of the Fire Slayers requires a Fire Slayer's flesh to balance its power. And I... a part of me does want it. To reach out and touch the hand of Grimnir. To feel the power of the shattered god in me. But such a weight of Urgold would drive even the greatest of warriors mad. My beard is short. My runes are few. I haven't the strength to bear it.
You're also the only fire dwarf here. Stick your bloody hand in it.
All right, Doomseeker. Blood and gold!
Brodo plunged his hand into the Master Rune's halo and grasped the burning metal.
Grimnir! I see the face of the Berserker God. Gold rays before my eyes in his blood. No! Fire! I burn!
From his beard, his arms burning!
His muscles are the sinews of the earth. His beard is molten up. His flesh is tattooed. I have seen them. I've seen them. Doomseeker! Doomseeker! Doomseeker!
Ah! No! He fights! I can see red scales! Coils! An air beast the size of the Ashhammer Gate!
What's happening to him?
Vulcatrix! No!
Let go of its tornishment!
Not yet.
The vision ran from him. Blood down a mountainside. Instinctively, he tried to drop the Master Rune, but it was too late. It had burned through the flesh of his hand and deep into the bone.
I can't! It burns! Oh, hotter than the end of the world! Ah!
The rune detonated in Brodo's hand, obliterating meat and bone to the elbow. It blasted him across the storehouse floor.
Are we beneath the waves of the Amethyst Fjords again, Doomseeker? Did we never leave the realm of death? Did Arcanus burn us after all? Is that his roar I hear? I think I hear Snorri Nosebite calling me to your ancestors' hall.
Leave him, Gotrek. The only reason he's not dead already is because Duarden are too stubborn to die quickly. It is time you and I followed the Arcanite's example and got out of here. If we leave now, there's a small chance we might get ahead of the explosion.
Don't wait for me, Elfling!
You heard what he said. Only a Fire Slayer can absorb that kind of power!
And much good his wisdom did him!
Brodor made a painful attempt to move, but failed.
No, don't. Only the true sons and heirs of Grimnir can hold such power.
Let this one be from a story smith, then! Start running, Elfling, because this slayer chooses doom!
If you stay, so do I, Slayer.
Gotrek bent down and closed his fingers around the fallen master.
Grimnir holds the curse!
Pink steam billowed from his hand and swallowed the Doomseeker whole, but he hauled the awoken master rune from the ground regardless.
Worse than the morning after the Manling's wedding in Karan Kadrin! Worse than Crown's axe!
He bent into his clenched fist, teeth bared, muscles bulging, as though the rune weighed more than the anvil of power upon which it had been struck. And yet, he lifted it. His one eye flared briefly golden.
Grimnir! Damn it! I regret this! No!
Doomseeker pushed the Master Rune into the muscle of his chest, just above his heart. His body tensed and shivered, appearing to swell. The white lines that Barrow Walker's magic had struck into his beard flashed golden. And golden they stayed.
The white in your hair! What the eye not seen did you in Shaiish! By Hecate, it's turning gold!
That's the worst of it!
Gotrek peeled his singed hand from his chest, his muscles continuing to twitch and flex at random. But the Master Rune now blazed from his chest, golden fire streaming from his hair and from his eyes, as well as from the rune itself. Brodor forced himself to open his eyes wider. The Master Rune had transformed into the angular, runic likeness of a face. The same face that sat atop the Battlesmith's icon.
Grimnir. Doomseeker.
Brodor closed his eyes, the lids suddenly too heavy for him to keep open.
I never doubted it. Not for a moment.
Stornismith! Stornismith!
Yes, another mortal warrior come to the walls of Hammerhal to give up his skull for a throne of corn!
A single blow from Gotrek's Firestorm Great Axe cracked the Berserker's breastplate like an eggshell and boiled him inside of it. Wrenching his weapon free with a roar, he reversed its grip and direction, then struck the cornate an uppercut that cracked his visor in half and punched him backwards over the battlements.
More! I'll shed chaos blood until those in the city below us drown in it! Or maybe figure out how to ferment it and brew a superior ale for those unlucky enough to live out this day!
Ask and you shall receive. That is what the Witchblade always used to say.
Good. I feel like I've just downed an entire barrel of Bugman's castle, and now have this powerful urge to kill something.
Now That'll be the Urgul speaking. It is feeding its strength to you. Behind you, Gotra!
Melaneth drew her knife. It punctured the demon, which disappeared in a puff of smoke.
I knew that beastie was there.
And I had smelled that cornate savage before he had cleared the battlements.
If any of my kin could see me here now, stood upon a wall 1,000 feet above a moat of living fire, fighting back to back with an elf. At least in that lioness getup they might not have known you for a dark elf. I'd never outlive the shame. No, not in another 10,000 years.
Oh, you are thinking that far ahead?
Aye, elfling. So help me, much as it may surprise us both.
And what happens in this halcyon future, Slayer?
The bandling I sought is gone. All changed. He would not remember my oath to him, even if I were to find him. But there are those who do remember. Other survivors of the world I knew. Nagash. The Grey Seer. Maybe I'll go look for my axe, then go looking for them.
Your axe?
Aye. To hear Jordain go on and on about Galmaraz this and Galmaraz that, you think it hadn't been made by mortal dwarfish hands? My axe was made by a god, a real god, even if he was a lying, doom-thieving swine. I'm glad he's dead.
My instructions were to return the master rune to Sigmaron. I don't suppose I might persuade you to begin your search in Azerheim.
They say that Sigmar scoured all the monsters from his realm and barred the gates to chaos. I prefer it here, and that's saying something.
Then perhaps I will go with you. Even the Eternal City is not large enough to hide me from the enemies I have there, and I will find more if I return empty-handed. I can always take the rune from your dead flesh when you die.
I'll try not to keep you waiting too long, elfling.
Oh, careful, Slayer. I'm not some ale-salted dwarden for you to push around.
Back, elfling!
An exalted flamer!
This is the best your world has got!
Leaping with surprising dexterity onto the high rampart, Gotrek made a grab for the free-floating, flame-dripping hose that was the demon's wrist. Catching it in one massive fist, he gripped down hard until the trickle of flame sputtered to nothing.
Feel the fires of Glimnir and the Unbacklodge demon!
Gotrek's axe hacked through the flamer's arm, then tossed the demon off the ramparts.
Oh, Brodur! Now, I think I know why I came back.
And why is that?
The Realmgate wars are done, so I hear. And half your so-called gods were ready to put their feet up. But they have neglected to remember one important thing. This Slayer!
Gotrek jumped onto the rampart's edge and threw his arms out wide. With a pulse of energy from the master rune, the Slayer burned briefly golden, a beacon of Grimnir atop the walls of Hammerhal Aksha.
Gotrek! Alive!
News, my minion. What news do your gift bring the Grey Lord Thankwon?
My brother, the eye not seen, is
fate. His doom. His doom was not foretold, Grey Lord.
Thankwall does not care about the weakling, fate master. Insignificant fool meat. The one-eyed Duodim. Tell me that the Firebeard is dead.
He lives, but his doom is 1,000 times foretold.
Lives? No. It cannot be. Not him. Not again. Not like this. Always the same. I want him dead. Dead.
Well, I mean, I'm playing Gotrek Gurnison, and he is, I suppose, the lead. He is an enormous, powerful personality. He dominates everything. He virtually takes on the universe. He takes on all kinds of evil forces, what he thinks is evil. He's like a strange giant dwarf knight-errant. What he has, I've never come across a character with such courage. His immense power. He can go through pain. He is thousands of years old. So he lives in all kinds of worlds. He's seen the earth with human beings, and then he's been with the giants. As it says in Genesis, the Bible, there were giants in those days. These mythological giants he's met through time and space. And he has got weathered it all with immense courage, a great fighting ability, and a love of fighting. But he's a poet. He has immense vision. He has strange maturity. So he doesn't take fools kindly, but he has a rich imagination, a gigantic voice, and the most powerful thing in the universe. He has the most powerful warrior. He transcends magic. He transcends prejudice. He transcends fear. He knows no fear. And for him, death does not exist. That life is the last word and death is not. It's the most bloody enjoyable part to play. He is a life force. It's an amazing text, an amazing script. I mean, it's artistically and brilliantly written. And they're directing it beautifully. This has been very demanding. And I played King Lear a year and a half ago. And I would say that this is 6.5 times harder. I think there's no doubt at all that I have the biggest voice in the acting profession. And so that, again, I'm used to being King Lear, I'm used to being any of these powerful parts on stage. So in The Three Musketeers, I've been Porthos in the past, Long John Silver in the past, Blackbeard in the past, and so forth. And the ginormous Voltan in Flash Gordon. So I have physically a bench press, even at my age, 400 or 500 pounds. I train for Everest all the time in space. And so I'm in a fantastic physical condition at the moment. My eyes are a bit sore because I've been in front of the cameras for 5 days non-stop. But I, in actual fact, I'm in peak condition. I feel about 10 years old. Climbing Mount Everest has made me young. I'm the oldest man to climb it without oxygen. And I've been to the North Pole. The oldest man to reach the North Pole on foot. So, I mean, this is easy for me. Yeah. Oh, I loved it. I said yes straight away. I couldn't say yes quick enough because of its imagination. It's universality. It's epic. And it has great reality. And it has marvellous relationships. My best friend in it has just died in a scene. And I kill the person who's killed him. And avenge him. And so forth. And so it has tremendous depth. And a strange alliance at the end between a very dark woman, who is dark. But because I'm so brave, because I can go through pain, because I can transcend magic or anything evil doesn't affect me, she joins forces with me at the end. And we're going to kind of purify the universe. I think the most important thing in acting, when you walk on a stage or in life, to be honestly vulnerable. If you're vulnerable, you produce your best work. So I'm not overconfident. I'm very confident, and I do things that shocks them. And so, God, Jesus, Brian, that's... So I've kind of burst the bubble of the universe at times and shocked them by a sudden interpretation of something, going from quiet and peaceful to gurgling like a giant, and suddenly being a philosopher, and the next minute being the most primitive. My wife often said about me when she met me, "You're the most primitive man I've ever met." And of course, we are all primitive. This embraces what we are. It'll make people feel good. We like doing our hair, doing our beards, wearing scents. People makeup on all over the place. Because, and wonderful clothes to show us off. Because we are primitive. And it's very healthy to be primitive. My wife said, "You're the most primitive man I've ever come across." I adore warriors. I am a 4th/5th Dan black belt, judo. In the 60s, I used to defeat some of the judo champions who'd won Olympic medals. And so I'm a bloody marvelous swordsman. So I've always, you know, reveled in all that. So a lot of it really isn't acting. I just be it. But I love things that are a challenge. All the actors have struggled in there, but they're producing marvelous performances out of vulnerability, not of being over sure, overconfident. So I go in there, and then it suddenly lights up. And it's teamwork. We've got a bloody marvelous cast. I can't do it without a bloody marvelous cast. But I would say it's the most demanding part I've ever come across. He's like 10 King Lears. It requires immense voice. an immense control of your diaphragm and power and infinite variety. So you don't just shout all the time. There is immense subtlety in his primitive character. He's adorable. And, you know, if you underestimate him at your peril. The best moment for my character was when I realized I can fulfill my destiny and that I enter a realm and a state of being in me that is limitless, that I prove in certain scenes that death doesn't exist and that life is the last word. He is an embodiment. He is a figure of great hope and power. And it makes us feel secure, makes us feel happy. And he has a wonderful sense of humour, strange sense of humour. And the realisation that he proves that death doesn't exist. Life is the last word. Gottrek, Gernison, my part, he comes in from different angles. On a sweet, childlike, he's very childlike. Then he's very wise. Then he's very old. Then he's a wizard. And then he sees... So he has an infinite variety of emotions and realizations, you know. And a spade is a spade with him as well. He's immensely honest.
I'm David Geimer, and I wrote the script for the 4 audios. So, yeah, so I'm pretty familiar with the Warhammer world. I've obviously played in it for a long time, since I was about 12. I've also written a few stories in the old Warhammer World setting. I think my first one was Head Taker. I even forget now exactly when that was, 2011, 2012, I think. And, but probably some of the biggest stories I wrote for there was the final two Gottrek and Felix novels set during the old End Time setting. So one of the great things about Gottrek is that as a character, he never really changes. Even as the world around him and he sort of picks up and loses followers, he is still this grumpy, taciturn, violent, sort of closed character. And also one of the things that you get throughout all of the novels, all the short stories that have been told about Gottrek is that you never see him through his own eyes. It's always told by his rememberer, Felix. And although you do occasionally get some other characters sort of Ulrika and so on, who do have viewpoints. But it's mostly told through Felix. So one of the big challenges when we went to Age of Sigmar with Felix no longer part of his story, at least not intimately, not immediately part of it, is how to tell that ongoing story from a new perspective. And so that's how we came up with various new characters sort of from the Age of Sigmar to tell his story. And one of the great things about using Gotrek is that he's always been a bit of an outsider. And so now he's coming from another world. And unlike the likes of Manfred and people like him who are also from the old world, but have been through the development of the Age of Sigmar, they've been around from the beginning. Gotrek is coming in cold. He's coming in from the world that was into the Age of Sigmar now. So he can be our eyes into the Age of Sigmar. So at the very beginning of the Realm Slayer story, Gotrek arrives within a Fire Slayer lodge. No one really knows how he got there. As far as we know, Gotrek himself doesn't really know how he got there. And he doesn't really want to get involved because he's from another place and everything's different, strange. These dwarves with flaming runes in their arms. And he wants nothing to do with it. But in the end, he sort of gets dragged into the greater goings-on of the mortal realms, and he's introduced to characters. And the way we devised these characters originally was that they were to reflect certain aspects of what Gotrek admired and was drawn to in Felix. So the first character we're introduced to is... I'm not actually sure how it was pronounced in the audios, but I thought it was Brother or Brother. And he's a Fire Slayer battlesmith, the young one. And so he is a little bit idealistic. He's a recorder. And so you can see how Gotrek might be drawn to that sort of side of his personality. And as the story goes on, we meet other characters. So in the next one, there's a human character called Jordain. And he's very brave. He is idealistic, he's romantic, and again, there's those aspects of the Felix character. And all these sort of serve to draw Gotrek into the mortal realms. And again, through his grudging acceptance of the mortal realms, the idea was for him to sort of showcase for us, for people who, you know, loved the Gotrek character in the old Warhammer world, how the new world has evolved and Gotrek sort of learns his place in it. Funny actually, because Matt announced at the Black Library Weekender in sort of last year, 2017, that there was a big actor in line for the role, but he didn't say who it was. And then, so when I found out it was Brian Blessed, I mean, you can almost picture them together, you know, if you have their sort of face of, King Richard IV next to Gotrek, you know, you can imagine him live acting Gotrek, much less performing the voice. So having Brian Blessed voice Gotrek Gernison is sort of, you couldn't ask for better. The great thing about the Gotrek character is that he doesn't really adapt at all to anything ever. So when he first arrives in the mortal realms, he carries on doing his own thing. You know, at first he refuses even to accept that this could be a real place. He thinks it's just a trick of the chaos gods are playing on him. But even then, when he gets over that, he just stomps around bemoaning the lack of a proper bugman's bar and, dwarfs running around calling themselves Duardin and all that sort of nonsense. But then, of course, you know, that's the reality on the ground now, and he finds himself in the unlikely situation of sitting in a bar with a necromancer and entreating on this person that he would never in a million years back in the old world have dealt with to help him and his new follower friend Jordain to find vengeance and get to this city they're trying to get to, Hammerhal. Yeah, so we see Gotrek progress in that way, but it's also possible to sort of play with the expectations a little bit with the Malaneth character, because she is what Gotrek would look back on as a dark elf and, you know, totally untrustworthy. And we first see her in the first audio, Doomseeker. And Gotrek obviously doesn't trust her at all. And turns out at least that he was right not to, because she was breaking into the Fire Slayer Lodge and trying to steal their most powerful rune. And then, he encounters her in the next two audios as well. But then, he gets the big shock in the final audio, Blood and Gold, where it turns out that she's actually not the bad guy. And Uthan Barrowwalker, the necromancer who he'd come to trust, had already betrayed him by this point, and he finds out that the Fire Slayer Lodge that Brodo was part of has allied with Chaos before, and, you know, that's something that would never happen back in the old world, and he realizes what a completely different and alien place the Age of Sigmar is to the world that was. But by this point, he sort of accepted he's got a place in it and a part to play, and scores to settle and rights to wrong and still oaths to fulfill. So writing a script for audio, it's easier in a way than writing a novel, but it can also be a bit harder, at least until you get used to the different format. I'm more accustomed to writing prose, sort of novels and short stories, whereas a script, you've only really got the dialogue and some directions. So it's sort of like a prose story with all of the little crutches taken away. So you have to tell your characters purely through their dialogue and, you know, a little bit of sound effects perhaps. You don't have all the sort of flowery description that you might pad out a prose novel with. Which means actually that you can tell quite a lot more story, because you're not, you know, swallowing up all your word count with all that sort of, when you really look at it, unnecessary description. Because your actors can carry quite a lot. They can convey things that as, you know, purely as writer talking to reader, you know, you can't always so well. And that's probably one of the reasons why we chose to do this as audio. Because some of the things you can do, some of the effects that we can use are really quite, you know, powerful and interesting and fun to use, and a really good way to show the Age of Sigmar.
So I am David Seddon and I play Brodo. How to get into voice acting? I suppose my first foray into it was I joined the radio drama company at the BBC. And I've not been in it too long. I graduated from drama school in 2002, but I was my first stint on the rep was, in 2010. And from then, it's kind of been a regular thing, but this is the first time I've worked with Games Workshop. But it's of a similar kind of format to what I'm used to at the BBC, so it feels quite familiar ground. So Brodur is a fire slayer, a Duardin, and I kind of see him as a kind of mixture between of Samwise Gamgee from The Lord of the Rings and Scrappy-Doo from Scooby-Doo, you know. He's this person who, without giving too much away, meets Gotrek and thinks that he is the god, Grimnir, who is the Fire Slayer's god, sort of being sent back. And he sort of spends a lot of the time sort of trying desperately to impress and ingratiate himself with Gotrek and kind of become his sidekick. But he's like a little puppy, kind of keeps getting kicked all of the time by Gotrek, who doesn't really want to have anything to do with him. But eventually he sort of, has a very heroic sort of ending towards the end of the radio drama. So. Yeah. How did I prepare? I recorded sort of demos for it and things and found a voice for it, which was kind of partially based on, I guess, Sean Bean, that kind of accent, and that kind of gruffness. But yeah, it was kind of reading it and sort of making notes and getting to know the kind of, one of the appendixes was the kind of the dwarven or the Duardin sort of words. And familiarizing myself with various curses and things. and yeah, just reading it and rereading it. I mean, it's a fantastic story anyway. It's really well done and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to listen to. So, I didn't have to do a massive amount of imaginary work, but I can't wait to hear what it sounds like with all of the effects on it. It's going to be brilliant. Certainly when you do sort of radio drama for Radio 4 and things, it isn't quite as fantastical as doing this. So actually this is a lot of fun. There's a lot of imaginative work. And, so yeah, it kind of reminds me of when I used to be a kid playing with my Star Wars figures. I mean, essentially that's why I became a voice actor anyway. You know, doing all the different voices of, you know, Darth Vader and Han Solo. So it kind of reminds me of that. And it's just a lot of fun sort of trying to create these dwarvish characters. I mean, I'm 6 foot one, you know, I'm never going to be a dwarf, so. He's a legend. I've got to say, when I saw the cast list for it. Well, first of all, if I hadn't seen the cast list, I would have just assumed that Brian would have been playing Gotrek. But yeah, he's a legend and it's been such good fun. I mean, aside from his brilliant performance, which is like pitch perfect anyway, he's the man of a million anecdotes and he's like an explorer. He's been up Everest without oxygen. He's been to the North Pole. He's just done 900 hours of training to go into space. I mean, you know, it's just like, wow, you know, and he's 81, you know, but it's just been incredible fun and a real privilege. It's just been a tremendous fun. It's the first time I work with Games Workshop and everybody has been so welcoming and just, it's just been great. It's been a great company feel from the director and, you know, Matt's been brilliant. And the cast have all been awesome. So it's just been a really good laugh, you know, and everybody's been really good as well. So, yeah, more please. Ooh, let's think. He's got so many cool ones. Being immolated by a god beast was quite cool. He's got I don't want to give too much away, but he's, towards the end of it, he's got a really sort of good moment, you know. But yeah, just generally running around, sort of chopping up Skaven and Sylvaneth and various bad guys, you know, beside, you know, Brian Blessed has just been brilliant. So he's had a lot of cool moments, yeah.
Well, I trained as an actor, so I was at drama school. And prior to that, I trained as a dancer. But towards the end of my training, they were looking for, ELT producer was looking for sort of young, clear-sounding RP-spoken voices. And so I did a couple of voiceovers for this certain producer. And because I grew up in the States, I used to have an American accent as a child, so I could also do American. So that kind of got me into the world of voice work. And then throughout my sort of early career, I did a lot of theatre work. And then in between, you know, tours, I would do, you know, similar kind of voice work. And then gradually, I found myself being pulled more and more into the voice world. And I mean, I still do occasional stage work, but now I'm mainly voice. Because there's just less limits. You know, one day you can be, you know, a little old lady, and then the next day you can be a little five-year-old boy from Texas. It's so, yeah, there's less limits. So there's a lot more sort of variety and diversity in what I do. And every week, well, every day is different, but, you know, this week I've done, you know, drama, I've done some animation, I've done some ELT. I like the variety. In Realmslayer. Wow, Malineth. Great ponytail. I wish I had her hair. she's quite I've got a lot of respect for her because she's very much sort of on her own really. And she doesn't have many friends, but that doesn't seem to deter her. She's got a great sort of direction. She's got great focus in terms of what she wants and what she's going to get. She's very She's very clever. She's very kind of conniving, and I have good respect for her. Well, with like this or for anything really, the clues I think are always in the script. And particularly if it's good writing, which this is. I mean, David is brilliant. And so he's very good at giving you a lot of guidelines in the way that he's writing. So I study the script a lot, and in terms of how we respond to situations will give us clues in terms of how we are as a person or an elf, elfling. So that will give me a guide as well in terms of her take on where she is, what she's doing, and the situation. Oh, amazing. I'm slightly in love with him. He's just extraordinary, and extraordinary in just every great possible way. His energy, his energy is incredible. And, you know, you look at a scene, and you think you have an idea, and then you work with somebody like Brian, and it just takes it to another level, and you find yourself, slightly, I noticed that this week when I was working, I found myself, you know, slightly going somewhere differently. And he's an absolute legend, and it's an absolute joy and a pleasure being in his company and working with him. Well, I've done quite a bit before, so I've been privileged enough to play other roles in this world, and understand that nobody has a sort of one syllable name. it's great to return to this world, because I do love it. I love the journeys that we go on, and as I said to you before, there seems to be no limit really from where you can go. Like, oh no, I'm not sure that would really happen. Well, actually, it can. Well, it's been great. As I said, you know, working with Brian's been fantastic, but working with the whole team, everybody's just so on it. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of fun, but there's also a lot of seriousness going on, because, you know, this is serious work. But it's been a very sort of loving, supportive, encouraging, creative environment. The coolest moment. I quite like being lowered down from the ceiling, or I suppose wouldn't have been the ceiling. That was quite fun. But having a fight with Brian Blessed was pretty cool.
I'm Andrew Wincott, and I play Uthan, who is a wizard. I went to university and did a lot of drama there and got involved in numerous productions. Then after that, I went to drama school. I did a one-year postgraduate course in London. Then started working in theatre. A few years into that, I joined the Radio Drama Company at the BBC. And that's really the start of my involvement in audio and radio work. So after that, I did a lot of radio drama, and then more recently audio work, computer games, audio books, and audio dramas like this. Well, the character I play is Uthan. He's a wizard, and it is a journey. It's a quest. He's helping the Duardin, the dwarves. And at the beginning, he's very, he has a sort of, he's an eccentric character. He's this eccentric wizard. He has a sort of skittish, maniacal kind of energy to him. But you realize that there's a darker side to him. And he's on a different quest himself. And it's really about power. But he certainly becomes a much darker force within the story. You immerse yourself in the script, the language, get a feeling for the style, and just let your imagination free. And that's really all you can do. I mean, we all have, there are other fantasies we can relate to, or we've read or experienced that resonate. But Yeah, it's about feeling the style and the sort of epic quality to it, the fantasy quality to it. And the language that they use. I mean, I'm casting spells. You can't really do much research for that except, if you happen to know any wizards, you can, do a bit of necromancy with them. But, in the sense that Uthan is British, English, eccentric, perhaps there's an element of comedy there, but then a darker side, it's a combination. It's a journey, and the duality of the character is great fun to play, but I've played comic and darker characters, villains, in other plays or other dramas, other audio dramas. I've probably been eccentric, professorial types, but whether I've been a wizard, possibly in computer games, and in the fantasy audiobooks, of course. You play all the characters in an audiobook. Brian's a force of nature, tremendous, extraordinary energy. And the whole company, we all sort of established a camaraderie. It's like we've been on a journey ourselves. But Brian's incredible with the experiences that he's had in the business, entertainment business, but also the documentaries, the places he's traveled, the mountains he's climbed. The experiences here, it's just been great fun just to work with great actors on a fascinating, fun script where you can just be free and let your imagination go and respond to the story and the language, really. As I say, I'm casting spells. It's quite a departure in that sense, where I don't get to do that every day. Probably the climactic moment, so I'm not sure if I should tell you too much about that, but where he's at his most powerful and most demonic and most necromantic. Yeah, I mean, it's all about power and energy, and you just let yourself go into it. Absolutely. There's a sort of demonic, maniacal energy, and it's just great fun to play. You can exorcise a lot of personal demons, actually, that way.
Well, I'm Jonathan Keeble, and I'm narrating the whole series, plus playing bits and pieces throughout, like the Skaven characters, which I quite like. Got into acting first of all, by listening to Richard Burton read Under Milk Wood, which made me want to act and made me want to do a lot of audio stuff as well. I was brought up in Devon, and I had a very strong Devonian accent. And my father, who didn't know a lot about acting, thought, well, you can't be an actor and speak with an accent. So he would drum it out of me by sitting me down in front of the news, and I'd have to listen to newsreader, the BBC newsreaders, Kenneth Kendall in those days, and he'd come on and say, today in Uganda, President Idi Amin has stated, and I'd have to repeat, and I go, today in Uganda, President Idi Amin has stated that, and my dad would say, no, listen to him, and I'd have to sort of repeat it in his accent. So that's how I changed my accent, which then, I ended up doing Amdram like people do and got into drama school. That was about 30 years ago now, so. Been doing it for quite a long time. I started off by doing a lot of theatre and I was in a telly series, but I always loved audio, and I joined the Radio Drama Company, which is the BBC Radio have a company of actors who they employ on fixed-term contracts. And I did that for 2 years in the early 90s. And I've now done over 700 radio plays, so it's a lovely part of my career. And when I left the Radio Drama Company, I started doing other audio work, audio books, audio games, audio dramas, audio guides. There's a hell of a lot of work there. you know, and it's expanded. You know, when I started, there were only 4 channels. Now there are as many as you like, all needing idents, ads, documentaries, da-da-da. So, yeah, it's a nice part of my career. Well, when you're narrating the audio dramas, and I do narrate quite a lot of the audio dramas as well, I think the narrator has to be a slightly different tone to the rest of it. Now, we're lucky enough in this one to have Brian Blessed. Now, it's going to be big and, you know, there's going to be a lot of action. So when you hear the narrator's voice come in, I think that should be not dispassionate, but it should be someone that gives the audience time to take in what's going on and not tell them what to think. Let them, give them room to emote. You know, I think a narrator should be someone who guides, but doesn't tell them what to think. So my preparation for it, in answer to your question, is to read the stories, make sure I know what's going on. And yes, sometimes I can comment on the, if something's humorous and the writer has given the narrator a humorous line, then I'll give it a bit. But I often try to sort of step back a bit and be quite sort of subtle in my reactions, if I can say that. Well, it's interesting because the Age of Sigmar, that world, I've done a lot of those audio books. So it's a world that I know that, so it wasn't unfamiliar to me. So the world of the Stormcast Eternals and all that, I did quite a few of those books when they came out. Yes, I mean, it's a cracking, it cracks along and there's lots of action. And yes, lots of characters that I think the audience can get involved with. That's what has happened in my time of narrating these books and dramas over the years. You still have the battles and big battles, but what's happened is that it's become more character driven, which I think, you know, as an actor is a great thing. You know, you have great, and you know, I do all the a lot of the Primark novels, finding out about them and their motivations and things. And yeah, in this one, there are a lot of, really good characters and some of whom are women, which, you know, again, is a thing that's coming more and more into it, which is good. Yes, well, as the narrator, you have an overview. And one of the lines that stuck out for me when I was narrating it, and this is sometimes a writer can give a narrator this a little bit of joy. There's Malineth steals a lioness guard's mask. And there's just a line in it about judging by the knife in her back, she didn't have any need for it anymore. Things like that, which you wouldn't actually, you don't play it as a joke, you let the line, but there's a lot of cool lines like that in David's script. Yes, I've worked with Brian Blessed before, so it wasn't quite the shock that it was for some people. Brian's not backward in coming forward with telling a few anecdotes and stories, and you can sometimes forget that you're there to actually do a bit of work. yes, and sometimes the air can get a bit blue. He can be quite fruity with his language, which is great fun as well. But yes, if you weren't expecting it, it can be a bit of a shock when you first meet Brian. When a character is described as being larger than life and a force of nature and so big, and you need someone who can fill those boots, and yeah. Well, Brian's straight from central casting for that, so.
Hi, I'm John Banks, and in this drama I'm playing primarily Snorri. I'm playing quite a few other characters as well, as you may or may not be able to detect throughout this, but Snorri is my my principal character. Well, for the most part of this drama, as I sort of hinted at earlier, I'm playing quite a variety of things. And in a way, I probably actually, in terms of the sheer amount that I have to do, I think the Skaven are actually probably the biggest thing that I do in this. Because I feel that the principal character, Snorri Nosebiter, is going to be, if there are more, I don't know if there are going to be more, but his story and his story arc are potentially quite huge, because his relationship with Gotrek and Felix is within this sort of a huge arc of time and story is quite key to this whole dynamic of who Gotrek is and what journey Gotrek is on. And I think that sort of is hinted at towards the end of the contribution that I make as Snorri. What's interesting about that is that there's a beautifully intimate scene between Snorri and Gotrek. We've seen Gotrek being this huge, larger-than-life character, a very impassioned character who suddenly, with Snorri, because of the history that they have together, becomes quite a different person. We start to see the hinterland of Gotrek, and it's in the dynamic between Gotrek and Snorri that those kind of things start to become revealed. And that's why I enjoyed playing that so much, because Brian was, you know, really on top form, giving all this sort of wonderful color and nuance to the character. And yet it wasn't until this particular scene where they're sitting around talking about other characters who they have known for a very long time and what happened to them and how are they still around? Are they still, part of this dynamic? And going into the backstory, they have been separated. All of these characters have been separated. And Snorri and Gotrek haven't seen each other for a huge amount of time. And what it's lovely about, it's beautifully well written. It's just essentially two old mates sitting together, no pretense, kind of needling each other a little bit. Snorri is a character who, like the rest of the Duardin, is potentially quite fierce, quite physically strong, courageous. And yet now we see a much softer side of him. We see him being taken care of in a way by Gotrek, because his memory seems to be failing. He seems to forget to do things. He can't quite remember events. He can't quite remember the details of their relationship. And Gotrek is forced to show a side of himself that we haven't seen so far in the drama. And I just love that dynamic. I love the way that Gotrek was able to show a kind of, not nurturing side of his character, maybe a little bit, but show less bluster to actually properly emotionally engage with a character who, despite the bits of needling and the banter that goes on, you can tell there is a fantastically strong bond there, and that Snorri, having perhaps felt lost and unsure of himself because of this sort of memory thing that he has, I think he's quite a lost soul at the point where he sees Gotrek again, and it's a point of it's an anchor point for him, and I think it's makes a huge difference to him that he can relate to someone that he's known for so long. As an actor, it clearly is appealing to me to play characters who are engaging. It's great to be involved in battle. It's great to describe these, you know, sort of galactic scenes of chaos and conflict and all kinds of things. But it's a beautiful thing to be allowed to play an intimate scene. And I love character-led drama, character-led audiobooks for obvious reasons, because I think an audience has to engage with a character in order to feel connected to the story. Well, Brian Blessed, goodness me. I was delighted. I can't tell you how thrilled I was to know that Brian was going to be playing Gotrek, because you just know he's going to bring so much to the part. The process that I enjoyed with Snorri was one of putting all those disparate elements of his